Today on the Athlete One podcast, 600-game winner, Audubon University baseball head coach, George Powell.
And then you'll have a kid that's an elite player that might not be great every weekend, but has a lot of skill sets that, you know, an Ohio State or Ohio University or D1 might like. And you'll have another kid on the team that doesn't have that skill set, but plays the game pretty fundamentally and plays it right, and will kind of associate his success on the field with somebody else that has a higher skill set. So they think that they can play at a higher level where they'll have everything it can handle at the Division III level on it. And that's kind of that. Those are the things that, you know, I think that kind of affect the recruit, that hurt us sometimes in the recruiting. As you said, I turn those up is I think a good way to put it. And they just don't understand how competitive it is here. That's the first thing. We'll get an all Ohio kid that think that just kind of slipped through the cracks, and you know, we'll meet with them. The first thing they say is, I'd never realized it would be this competitive, because you're still dealing with 22-year-old men.
Welcome to the Athlete One podcast. Veteran high school baseball coach Ken Carpenter takes you into life's classroom as experienced through sports. Go behind the scenes with athletes and coaches as they share great stories, life lessons, and ways to impact others.
Episode 99 of the Athlete One podcast is powered by the Netting Professionals, improving programs one facility at a time. The Netting Professionals specialize in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for baseball and softball. This includes backstops, batting cages, BP turtles, screens, ball carts, and more. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf protectors, dugout benches, and cubbies. The Netting Pros also work with football, soccer, lacrosse, and golf courses. Contact them today at 844-620-2707. That's 844-620-2707. You can visit them online at www.nettingpros.com. Or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Before you settle in, I'd like to ask a huge favor. If you could, please hit the subscribe button and leave us a review. It helps us to grow the show. Now to my interview with 600-game winner, Audubon University baseball head coach, George Powell. Hello and welcome to the Athlete One podcast. I'm your host, Ken Carpenter. Joining me today is Audubon University head coach, George Powell. Coach, thanks for taking time to be on the show.
Thanks, Ken, for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's April, it's 40 degrees, and I guess typical baseball weather in Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just dealing with this weather this whole week, just trying to figure out practice schedules and all that stuff, and trying to get on with you was kind of a challenge, but we're here. But yeah, it is. You know, you always go through this in April, especially in Ohio.
Well, you have a week to let it sink in. Your thoughts on getting win number 600, and you joined an elite group of coaches: Don Schilling, Brian Bruner, Bob Fisher, Herb Strayer, and another Audubon coach, Dick Fischbaugh.
Yeah. It's really to reflect on it. It's been, you know, when you get to, you don't coach for the milestones. It's just something I think that happens via a lot of reasons. You know, like I got a lot of well wishes on, Twitter and, just messages, texts that this was just unbelievable. And so you don't really realize what you do until you hit these things. You hope you do and impact people the right way. But just the well wishes was really good. But just reflecting on it, it's kind of surreal. I was a Coach Fischbaugh's assistant when he had his 600th. It was somebody purple. I don't know if it was Capitol or Mount Union, but it's just surreal to me. I can't believe as you know, when you coach, you always feel young and just doesn't feel like 25 years. And 600 wins. It's unbelievable. And to be in and be mentioning those guys' status. I mean, Don Shelley's the all-time winningest coach. I mean, I think maybe in baseball. It's just incredible what he did. But just, yeah, and Bob Fischer was always good to me. Having an opportunity to coach against all of them was something I thought, when I was reflecting, I thought was pretty neat, you know, while with it. But just Bob Fischer, Herb Strayer, just those are the shoulders that, you know, us coaches now in the OAC, which is a great conference, those are the shoulders we're standing on. And they're the ones that made this conference the best in Division III, you know, out of 385 or 86 teams. It's just the most competitive league, and it's just an honor to be in named with those guys. And it's nothing that you sign up for. It's something that I've, you know, you think you're going to get to, or it's something that happens via luck and being around a lot of really good people, having a lot of really good coaches, good players. And you know, like I said, I can't emphasize enough good people. So it's been pretty cool just reflecting and getting messages and catching up and with people I haven't talked to. So that's the other good thing about milestones, that it reconnects you with people that you have good feelings for and that they have for you. And you kind of let those feelings go for years. And then when these things happen, you get to reconnect. So that's been the real nice thing for me.
Well, I've known you for quite some time now. And, you know, I thought when I was doing my research, I'm going to try to go a different route here. So I reached out to a current player that I had a chance to coach. And he's a pitcher for you, Luke Waller.
Well, yeah.
I said, because, you know, when I go to looking at things, I like, but I'm going to ask about this. I thought, what would a player like to hear? And he said to ask you about the team culture. And he says, it's amazing that the great mindset you set with all the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I go ahead.
So how do you go about calling that?
I just think being around the game, Ken, like you have, I hope this thing doesn't keep people like this. I don't know how to turn it on. But as you know, I mean, I think the longer you go, you know what's good. You know, I've been very fortunate to coach a lot of really, really good teams that really show you what good culture is all about. And it's really the leadership within the players. But you try to point them to the right direction. That's the one thing I would say I coach more than ever now, is just the mentality of the game and not letting it overwhelm you and being a good teammate and understanding how lucky, you know, these guys are to have an opportunity to play at this level. With all the other crazy stuff that's going on in the world, it's, you know, they have it pretty good. And having them understand that, and I talk a lot about, you know, what it is to what you have to be to have success at this game. Because as you know, it's unforgiving, it's guaranteed failure, and it's how you handle those things that I think individually that allow you to collectively, if you can handle those things the right way, you can pick people up that are going through the same issues that happen in the game, whether it's a slump or, you know, you did everything right, but you lined out and you have nothing to show for it. And that's what this game is trying to do. It's trying to overwhelm you. Mentally. And when you can get it together mentally from an individual standpoint, I think collectively guys start feeding off of each other with it and picking each other up. And, you know, when you get a bad strikeout, somebody comes up and picks you up, the next guy picks you up. And I think that's kind of, you know, what I probably preach more than anything is about who you are. And I don't know. Yeah, I talk a lot about the mentality that you have to have success in this game. And I think part of that is being a good teammate. We don't vote for captains and stuff. And I think that was something I did early in my earlier days, because I always thought to myself, it's a tough sport to lead in when you're in an 0-for-13 slump and the game already overwhelms you with, you know, with those type of negative things, outcomes that happen regularly in the game. So, and I don't want to restrict leadership. So, you know, in the years past, I think that's part of it too. I think everybody feels invested, whether they play a lot or pitch a lot. I think a couple are really good leaders in our pitching staff are the Conrad twins that are seniors that really, you know, haven't had a lot of opportunities. And when I say many opportunities, I'm saying maybe an inning here, an inning there in their whole career and your seniors, but they hold guys accountable. And I think that's the thing that's special within our program is, you know, there's definitely a standard that's been set long before, as you mentioned, Coach Fishball, and you know, that's a standard of Otterbein baseball, and you have to kind of try to get to that regular. But you need the right people, the right guys to do that. You can't do it with you know, kids that are selfish or, you know, it's, you know, or they, that's, baseball is the blame game. You can blame anybody anytime. It's the umpire's fault. The coach took the pitcher out, put another guy in they shouldn't have put in. The shortstop made three errors, you know, all that stuff. So when you get people away from those type of easy way outs, then I think, you know, you get them to focus on the right things. And that's hopefully individually to grind for that individual success. So collectively for, as a team, you know, it benefits everybody.
Well, you know, welcome back to your career. You mentioned Coach Fishbaugh. How big a role did he have? And, you know, did your dad play a role in your approach to playing the game and now coaching baseball?
I think obviously I'll start with my dad. It makes it easier that way. But my dad, just little things in the game. He was a guy like that taught me how to handle things. And when I didn't handle things, he didn't let me off the hook. And I think that's the problem today sometimes with parenting. When parents get involved, I think the negative side of it. I think parents' involvement is fine as long as they let the kids experience their experiences and not try to force the experience. And within those experiences, there's going to be negative outcomes. Which is growth. So you want that, but sometimes parents don't. But my dad was just so influential in sports. He thought athletics was a mechanism that will teach you about life. So I played growing up football, basketball, and baseball, and I did it in high school at Westerville North a long time ago. But his attitude was just the athletics teaches you about life. So, and he made a big point in that, and especially when we had, you know, tough losses as little kids. And when I would cry when we'd lose, cause I hated losing as a little kid. And, you know, he would say that's part of this. Those are good things that happen. And little things in baseball that I still, you know, teach here and talk about all the time is, and I'm happy now cause we've been real successful this year is our two strike approach. My dad, baseball wise, was just a big guy choking up, moving the baseball. And that was always something that stuck with me, even though I would be, you know, growing up in my high school and college career, I'd be a middle lineup guy, but it was always important for me to move the baseball. Now, from a coaching standpoint, Dick Fishbaugh, meant, you know, I think they're both the most two influential men in my life, mentors. You know, obviously my dad meant everything to me. He was a great, great father. I miss him dearly every day. But Dick Fishbaugh was just he was just a technician on coaching and hitting and how he laid things out and how he was so direct when he coached. He was, taught me a lot. And that was and then he taught me a good mentality as a coach, kind of be even keeled and see things for what they are and to understand that there's going to be some bad days in baseball and not to go too high or too low. So his consistent approach on how he did things. And very direct on how he coached. He was a technician. He was a, you know, back in, you know, you go into the 80s and 90s, and if you want to go into the 70s, he was a guy that all the, you know, baseball people wanted to have come talk about hitting to their team, or whether it be at a convention or a high school coaches seminar or whatever it might be. He was always that guy. But he meant a lot to me just from that standpoint, just being direct and, he just hugely influential, and he was a great man for me. He was always supportive of me. So, it's two huge influences on me. Mike Florak, I coached with just for 1 year. He taught me a lot when I was up at Youngstown State after my experience with Coach Fishbaugh. He taught me just in 1 year, just about how, again, to be direct and, you know, be precise and decisive on making decisions. And, and I know I can go back on Roger Engels with playing for him at Ohio Wesleyan. He was the same way. He just, he taught me a little bit about culture. If I look back at it now, he would galvanize the team, especially when things would go sideways. But Dick Fishbaugh and Ed Powell were, you know, Ed Powell was as good a father as anybody could have. And Dick Fishbaugh's as good a mentor and even more than that to me, you know, he was just like a second father to me. But just hugely important to me.
When you look back into your career, what are some of the absolutes a player must have to play at Auerbein and be successful?
The absolutes is, I think, to have the passion to play. I think that's the thing that everybody likes, the idea of going and playing. And I think that's what happens because it's still a step up. And you hear a lot of times, like I said, if you come watch an OAC baseball game, come and watch Baldwin Wallace or us or Heidelberg or these teams. I mean, it's good baseball. In this conference, it's as good as it gets. All the teams in the country, when we go down south, want to play us because, you know, we're the conference that are having 2 and 3, you know, World Series teams. But the absolutes for players is that passion. Obviously, talent matters. But you know, I've had really good luck with guys that were under recruited or not recruited at all. And everybody in Division III is a walk on. But you know, we've had some guys that we didn't recruit that just showed up, that were all, you know, all region players, academic All Americans, and just great contributors to our program. But I would say going back to the absolutes, the passion, the work ethic. I think being who you are is hugely important. Like you were talking about culture earlier, I think the type of person you are, the selfless, you know, person. And you know, I use the line, the guy used to be at University of Louisiana. I think he's not there anymore. But one of the things he used to say is work while you wait. And you know, we talk a little bit about that. But just I would say the absolutes is just having the really true joy to playing. So what, and I guess one way to define it, whatever you're doing, and if it's not baseball, the next thing is baseball. You know, so if it's studying, the next thing you're doing is probably going to be hitting or, you know, lifting, something that's going to help you become a better baseball player. You know, I would say that probably for me is just the passion to really, you know, have that love to play, discipline. I think, you know, within that, that it's important to you.
Well, you had a chance to experience being the assistant coach. Talk about how important your certain coaches are along this staff, your staff's.
I've had a who's who. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. I mean, in my first recruiting class, I had Brian Meyer, who played and was on the 2003 OAC championship team, or the first one, you know, that I was able to coach. You know, he came on as a graduate assistant to me after he was done, and then his transformation in the coaching world has been, you know, pretty dynamic. Where he went to Wright State, he went to Tulane for a while, went up to Butler, and then got an opportunity to get into pro ball. We saw him down in Fort Myers. He was the manager of the year in the single A the Florida League last summer, and he's coaching. You know, he's a single A coach now for the Fort Myers Muscles. But he's part of that lineage for me that, you know, I was able to coach. Brink Ambler came into my life. I don't know if you know Brink, but Brink came in because his wife was, you know, getting a master's degree at Ohio State. He went to the University of Alabama. He did a lot of really good things from a hitting standpoint. And some of these guys did it for literally next to nothing. And now he's I just talked to him about, he's another guy I just reconnected with. He was a AAA coach for the Tidewater Tides, the hitting coach, and now he's kind of going through all the organizations now. But he's part of, you know, he was in there for about 3 or 4 years for me in the couple championship years. Jordan Cairo, who everybody knows, Jordan, his Christian played for me. Jordan helped a couple years and did a lot of good things, brought a lot of things that Wright State did over. I'd be remiss with not saying John McCourt from a pitching standpoint. But probably the biggest influence that was a crossover with me and Coach Fishwell was Dave Ewing, who was with me and Coach Fish for a long time. That's kind of set up. We've always pitched it real well, set up our pitching at the end. But there's so many, like, you know, other guys now, the current staff, Colton Hahn's doing a really good job. I'm finally resourced and staffed the way we should be. Thank goodness from the support from our current AD, Craig Lott, our current AD, and Bill Fox, our VP of Affairs. Made that happen. So we were one of the last teams in the OAC not to have a full-time assistant. And, you know, with carrying as many guys as, and not many now because of COVID's done, but like being in the mid 40s and get of guys and having two teams, I think that's, you need that support with it, you know. And so we got two graduate assistants now, and, you know, we're just staffed the right way to where we can develop guys. And in the past, it was just kind of touch and go just because guys were doing it for nothing. You know, Russ Mead's been with me for a long time. He's a guy that played in the program. He helps out. Tom Ryan's with our pitchers now. His grandfather is Jack Ryan, one of the all-time greats in Central Ohio. So there's plenty of other guys that I'm proud of. I know I'm leaving out, like Aaron Hutchinson, Bobby Wright. I mean, there's so many guys that have made this program what it is, and have allowed me to have the success that I've had as a coach with it. But just, I could go on and on, but there's, you know, the Dave Ewings, John LaCourts, the Joe Wilkins. I forgot to list him. He's been huge. Joe Wilkins from Norwalk, not from Columbus, not from Scioto. The guy, we got another Joe Wilkins there, yeah, who's done, might, has a huge influence on our program and pitching development and just a lot of things we have in place. There's just been so many hands involved. And it had to be because, you know, there was nothing really here holding them. So you had to take the help. As you know, as a coach, there's nothing better than good assistant coaches that you can rely on, that you know stuff's getting done when it needs to get done, that you can't always be there for, especially now. And, you know, my role, a lot of times I find myself doing, Mike Florek told me this at Youngstown State, when I would come into work, I'm sorry, I'm carrying on, but I would come into work and I'd go through my recruiting pile and by pitching, you know, what we're going to do for pick, and everything was just, you know, it was just pretty smooth with it. And he's dealing with kids, you know, not doing well in class, discipline issues and whatever that's going on, that's coming down from, ironically, at that same time, Jim Tressel was the athletic director at Youngstown State when I was there, but he's dealing with all this stuff. And I remember him saying, you know, he watched me one day do all my things and get everything in order and stuff. And he hadn't even really got started on the things he wanted to. And he said, my chair that is about one fifth about coaching baseball. And he goes, just realize as an assistant coach, you get to do the fun stuff. You get to do the coaching and all that. So, but you absolutely need, and I, from that, he's totally right. So there's just a lot of things now that I'm coming in after I get done here, I'm reconciling bills and, you know, where we fed the guys and just little things that, you know, go under, you know, that you have to do now that are different. There's just a lot of things to manage to now that, you know, in the earlier days you didn't have, but regardless, you need to have great assistant coaches. And I've been really fortunate to have them. I hope I didn't miss any of them because they've all been, you know, they've all been hugely important to what we've done and what we do.
Well, over the past 25 years, how much do you think the game has changed? Is the recruiting different? Or is it the play?
I go back to the point where I was like kind of I would come in and call from the office phone from like 7 to 10 from like Sunday night to Thursday and send out mass mailers to all the colleges and stuff. With social media now, there's times where, I text with guys and it's kind of crazy. It's, you know, sometimes you don't know what somebody's voice sounds like until you get them on campus for a visit. So, No, the recruiting for sure has changed. The game's changed because of how everything is. Obviously, it comes down from Major League Baseball, trickles from Division I to us. And we got the times stuff now for pitches and, you know, just everything else, launch angles and the hitting and just the other stuff, you know, with drive line. And I think we were doing that stuff before that stuff. But drive lines kind of came in and branded stuff from a pitching, hitting. Oh, you know, and what the body was really doing when we thought it was, you know, when we had the VHS, when we were taping hitters at the most important point at contact or when they were throwing the ball, it was nothing but a big blur. So you couldn't really see. But when super slow-mo came in, that kind of changed the game. And we kind of understood what the great players were doing. And that's what we tried to do. I know with Dave Ewing and with the pitchers and John LaCourt and Joe Wilkins what we did with the hitters and Jordan Cairo and Brink and the guys that I mentioned at the even Brian Meyer in the earlier days, you know, you were able to kind of see. So it kind of changed what you taught. I think we would teach a little bit different than what Coach Fishball taught in hitting. I would love for him to be around this now just to hear him talk about it because he had a strong opinion on how you swing a bat. And I'd love to hear his thoughts on it on that same question with the launch angles and all that stuff. And I think there's so much stuff out there. It gets kind of tangled up and, confusing for guys. So I think the game is sometimes overcomplicated. We overcomplicate it now than we might've before, you know, in terms of doing things, but you still have to do the things to win that the game requires you to do. And that's, you know, limiting free bases, throwing strikes, making routine plays defensively. You know, limiting strikeouts, getting on base the other way, and getting in plus counts offensively and, you know, the bunt game and doing the little things. The game dictates a lot of times what you have to do. And being consistent at it is probably the main thing, but, I would say that, the bat flipping and all that other garbage that goes on now, which, you know, again, stems from the big leagues and stuff, you know, that I don't think has any part of it. It eventually hits us and hits our players, and goes down to high school for that matter. But the recruiting for sure, just because of the social media stuff, it's just easy to instant message guys, text guys, get on it. You know, if you hear a name, somebody's looking to, you know, I don't know, somebody says somebody's interested, you can get on in 5 minutes, get on a computer and get video on them, you know, where in the past you used to have to wait for them. And I just think there's so much stuff out there. It's harder to get the, you know, there's times where you can still do it, you know, where you can, where as you know, small college guys, you can go out there and get somebody that should be playing at a higher level, but that's harder and harder to do than it was in my earlier days. Like the Doug Stevens, a kid from Newark Catholic, and Dan Romanowski, the our 1-2 punch in my earlier years, that, you know, made it real easy for me to coach, get on a bus and go play somebody, whether it be Marietta or whoever, to have those two guys going 1-2. I always felt pretty good about what the outcome was going to be that day. But getting those type of recruits now is a little bit more difficult because there's too much stuff out there on guys. But that's probably the thing that's changed. It's the interaction, the communication part of it is done through texting more now than it is by talking. I'm still an old school guy. I like the verbal stuff probably better than I do the texts, because you can take a lot from whatever. What's that mean? You know, with texts and stuff, what's that supposed to mean? But it's all changed, you know, from that end of it. And the game's changed just from the standpoint of, you know, what the great players are really actually doing. We really never knew, you know, we didn't know why Sandy Koufax was able to throw for, you know, whatever, he threw the innings he did 10 years and stuff, and eventually his body breaks down. But it's like, he was very efficient with his body. And that's why he struck a lot of guys out through a lot of no hitters. And, you know, back then, if we're coaching that in the 80s, we'd probably be telling Sandy Koufax to throw a different way, when actually he was throwing the way he should have been throwing.
Well, D-free baseball in Ohio has to be the best in the country. Talk about why high school players should consider the D3 route, because you hear a lot of, you know, kids talk about, you know, D1 or bust. But
right, I think now it's really going to change. Well, I mean, I think you got so many colleges, and people don't realize that in the country. I think we got 12 or 13 Division Ones, and now there used to be NAIAs, but now you got, you know, all the Ashland, you got a Division II conference in your state. Now you got, and within Ohio, you have three Division III conferences, basically. With us, I think for me, the OAC is the best, just because it's just competitively and ranked wise, and what we do against the best teams in the country at our level. There's pockets, you know. Wisconsin has those big schools, the Whitewaters, the Lacrosses, and the Oshkoshes, and those schools. Those are 20,000, 15,000 student universities. And then East Coast, you have the same kind of thing. There's some big schools on the East Coast, but in the New England area, there's good T3s, but there's really none down South and out West. You have one conference out in Southern California, a really elite school. So it's tough, you know, for kids to get in those schools. And really there's nothing too much downtown, a few schools in Georgia, but nothing pressing. So, I think in Ohio, it's just really good. And now with the portal and all the things with the rules and all that stuff is changing. I talked to a high school coach a couple of days ago, a really successful Ryan Alexander, a couple of days ago. You know, Ryan, really great local coach. And we're talking about a little bit. It's like, it might get to a point where they're, you know, with the portal and what D1 coaches are doing, they're, you know, they're plucking guys out and they're going, some guys are going JUCO routes now. So I think we might be a stepping stone for guys that maybe come and play at our level for two or three years or, and then go try to move up to a higher level. I don't know if I'd be a fan of that, because I like the development process of it. But it's just really good baseball. I mean, the OAC at this point, I mean, I would say in the last 10 years, it's probably been like that. It hasn't always been, but there's always been, you know, really good teams in the conference. But I think top to bottom what makes it. But, you know, that's like I said earlier, I think come watch a game. I mean, we've had scouts come and watch our game and go watch Ohio State. You know, I've heard this from scouts before, and they thought the game was played better at our level. You know, there might be an arm or two that were obviously better going to Ohio State and watching a Big Ten matchup, but the game and how things are played and what we and how we do, you know, things, I think are very fundamental. And I think that leads to, you know, good baseball. So, there's a lot of us. So it's the other part of this too, is I've changed kind of my recruiting part of it. We obviously still recruit Ohio and Central Ohio, but there's pockets in this country where you can go and get kids that don't have what we have right here. And, you know, and it's crazy. It's not states like Arizona and Phoenix and those areas. It's the fourth biggest city. I went out there, to recruit just a little bit, and there's a huge Ohio contingent out there with connections and stuff. But, you know, there's places now where with again, the internet, that you go out there, there's not a lot of opportunities for a really good student out there that's a pretty good player to catch on with one or two Division Ones and a couple of D2s and JUCOs that are really good out there. There's that good student out there that, you know, so you got to kind of be, you know, kind of going back to the last question on what's changed, is that's probably the thing that you kind of open your spread, you throw your net out on a wider base now in the recruiting efforts, where you can go to different pockets in the country to, you know, try to get kids and attract them to this. And we've been able to. We've got a couple of kids from IMG, got a kid from Tokyo. That's why I'm wearing the hat. He got me the Yamare Giants hat. Haruki Tada, he's a senior. And we got a kid from Seoul, South Korea, through a connection with Dan Simons down at IMG, that are two good players. And those are things that I don't think people, kids growing up in Ohio, understand, that we're able to attract really good players here too, from not just Ohio. So, but you know, it's right. We're right in the a lot of people, and these are great education, you know, schools that have, I mean, we're reversed in a lot of Otterbein's been the growth. That's one of the things changed the just the immense opportunities here, just from an academic standpoint with degrees. It's really, you know, it's changed. There's a lot of opportunities that way. So when you can have those opportunities in the recruiting part of it to balance the academic side to the baseball side, I think those are, you know, those are the things that I think can be attractive to any recruit.
Well, you know, when I was a head coach and I'd have a player that was considering, you know, or they were wanting to play college baseball, I would always tell their parents and the player, all you got to do is go right here to Central Iowa and you can see some really good D3 baseball. And, you know, you shouldn't turn your nose up to that, because it's it's very good. And, you know, that's a thing a lot of players don't realize, is D3, I can recall, it's been quite a while, but I believe Ohio Western beat Ohio State at this point.
Yeah, they did. And Roger Engels did. And you know, not to talk about me, but we got my 300th win halfway through against the University of Cincinnati, a really good team. And it's just baseball. We were able to beat UC, and a kid that was, I think, drafted in the seventh round. You know, it's just baseball sometimes. And if you play the game right, you can, you know, get good results. But Tim Petterine at Worcester beat Ohio State. And those are years where, you know, I think Ohio State won the Big Ten. So with Bob Todd, it was back in those days. So, I think you can. I think kind of what you alluded to, where kids turn their nose up, part of the issue now is, you know, we run into it now, is there's less kids because of lacrosse and other sports. There's less kids playing baseball, but there's more teams in the summer. So it doesn't really add up, you know, in terms of that. But what happens is, in summer leagues, you got, you know, 10 to 12 players on the team, and they get guest players. So all the kids are used to playing. And then you'll have a kid that's an elite player that might not be great every weekend, but has a lot of skill sets that, you know, an Ohio State or Ohio University or D1 might like. And you'll have another kid on the team that doesn't have that skill set, but plays the game pretty fundamentally and plays it right, and will kind of associate his success on the field with somebody else that has a higher skill set. So they think that they can play at a higher level, where they'll have everything it can handle at the Division III level on it. And that's kind of that. Those are the things that, you know, I think that kind of affect the recruit, that hurt us sometimes in the recruiting. As you said, I turn the nose up is I think a good way to put it. And they just don't understand how competitive it is here. That's the first thing. We'll get an all Ohio kid that just kind of slipped through the cracks, and, you know, we'll meet with them. The first thing they say is, I'd never realized it would be this competitive, because you're still dealing with 22-year-old men when you're 18. So it's a whole different, you know, ball of wax. But I think it gets confused because of what other, like, you know, Billy's going to get the Division I scholarship, but Tommy's just as good or having a better summer. The parents can say, well, he's better than him. He should go to Division I, and he doesn't have the skill set He'd be eaten alive if he saw 92 every day at the plate. But he can hit 84, 85, you know, which is, you know, probably the sweet spot for us. But I think we get pitchers that throw 84, 85 that have better pitchability than some Division I guys that have that throw 92 or 94, you know, that, but I think to kind of to your point, that's, you know, kind of jumping back to your last question, I think that's something that has effect. I think summer baseball has changed and kids are used to playing. So they're not used to starting over at the college process and understanding that the development process is still going. A lot of times guys nowadays, I've been pretty fortunate here, but a lot of guys are impatient with it. You know, and they want that instant gratification. They don't understand why they're not playing because they've always used to been playing. You know, as you know, as I coach in high school, you know, way back when you used to have a freshman team, a JV team, and a varsity team, and you really, you know, on good high school programs, you didn't get a sniff until your junior year, even no matter how good you were then. And now that's not the case. Kids are used to playing varsity as a freshman or sophomore, so they're used to playing at that level. So sometimes that's thing that you know, when they get to us, they feel like that they're almost entitled to play, but you still got to earn it here too.
Yep. Well, you know, you mentioned high school, and you were a pretty darn good player coming out of high school. You played for Hall of Fame coach Bob Hanley at Westerville North. Then you went to Roger Ingalls up at Ohio Wesleyan, and you were a four-time All-Conference selection at three different positions: first base, third base, and DH. Did they have any influence on how you do things nowadays?
Oh, I think all of them do. I think I'm glad you mentioned Bob Hagley because he was another guy that, you know, taught that it was like I said, I've been in high school. I played football, basketball, and baseball back in the day when you could do that. And now coaches aren't in a really good spot in sharing, as you know, trying to get guys to play summer baseball and stuff. But they were all a huge part. And, you know, Bob Hagley was just a fundamentally sound coach, and he brought a mentality of, like, you know, expect to win, and just we're here to beat you mentality, and expect to win every time, you know. And but a very fundamental coach. But I think, yeah, those guys helped me. And I think going back to what I said about my dad, the two strike hitting, obviously the positions you're talking about, what I played, I don't know how, I mean, I probably was better at first base in any position. I played it most of my life. But I played third base 1 year and was probably, you know, I'd make some really good plays and then have some really routine errors too on routine plays in DH. So hitting obviously was the thing that I did well. But I think, yeah, I think all of them, you know, when I was playing at Wesleyan, I would give lessons at Grand Slam. That's kind of got me hooked up with Coach Fish. And Coach Fish taught me a lot while I was, you know, playing it. I understand it. Kenny Schultz is another guy, God rest his soul, that was a summer coach I loved playing for when I played for Gar Trussley in the Westerville A's way back in the day when I was in college and stuff. But I learned a lot from all those guys in terms of hitting. It's a constant, you know, as you play, if you're learning and you're cerebral about it, you don't overthink it, but you're trying to understand what you're trying to get your body to do. I think, you know, being around a lot of good minds, and Bob Hagley was a guy that took preach moving the baseball, being able to slash the bunt game and all that stuff. And I was always able to do some of that stuff, even though I didn't run great. I don't know. I think, and Roger Ingalls was, you know, that he was, it was, you know, I just always was around people that was about moving the baseball. And that was something that I always focused on. So I think I always gave myself a better chance to hit, by limiting strikeouts and those type of things, I think statistically. And that's what I try to tell our team. You know, if you're hitting 333 and you've had, let's say, 30 at bats and you've struck out 10 of them, what happens if you strike out five and you get two hits in there? And that makes that whatever. You know, if you're looking at, as I call them, stat rats, the guys that are always looking at those things, because sometimes the results don't, you know, say what you're doing, because you can be having good at bats and not having positive results. But I think all those guys had a big influence on me offensively. Like I said, I would say Bob Hagley, or my dad, Bob Hagley, Bill Herbert, Harbor, that coached me, that really got me to love the game. He just recently passed, coach of the War Cats, the original ones when I was 13, 14, a lot of really good players played at a high level, the original summer ball teams. he had a big influence on me, just starting to love the game and kind of separating me from, wasn't sure if I was going to go football, basketball, or baseball. But he, Bill Harbor, was the guy that at a young age, it got me to love the game. And like I said, my dad with two strike hitting early and just a consummate, like with Fish and Roger Angles. Those guys were, you know, they're just good coaches. Roger was really good about how you make adjustments and, you know, approaches and stuff. I, you know, the things I remember, how he helped me from a hitting standpoint.
Well, you know, it's funny that you meant, you know, when you talk about Bob Hagley, when I moved to Central Ohio back in the early 90s, I started off as an umpire and I got assigned to a Westerville North game. And in the middle of the game, it just starts pouring. So we pull everybody off the field, but you could look up to the right, and you can see the track. Kids were running on the track. It was a track meet.
Yeah.
And I did not know Bob Hagley until I met him during ground rules. And I remember him looking up there, and he says, look at that. There's a kid's 100 yards behind everybody else. He's going to finish fourth, and he's going to get a medal for that. And I was just like, oh, boy, you just tell. He was like, he loved winning, you know.
Yeah, he was a, I mean, and that's a really good point. I think he would teach you about what can being competitive really was, like what it is. You think you know what it is, like because you want to, you want that self-gratification. But he that was definitely him. That was definitely that end result. You showed up no matter who it was. And we were really unfortunate my junior year not to win a state championship. And, you know, lost it to Tuffy Rhodes and Cincinnati Western Hills, where Pete Rose went to school, and a 2-day deal where, you know, we had to come back because it was at Troutman Field and we lost light. And it was just, you know, it was a great team, but I'd say there's times where it just would will us to win games. Like when the game didn't treat us good or we had, you know, because that's what the game does sometimes. I go back and talk, sharing about the University of Cincinnati. I mean, I think we took our third baseman out of the game that day because they hit a ball so hard that our third baseman thought he broke his hand catching it, and we had to take him out. But they hit a lot of balls like that. And you know, it wasn't that Otterbein was – we were at the right place, right time, and scored, but and that's what the game does. But I don't know. I think going back to Coach Hagley, he was just – you know, my point is the game sometimes – doesn't treat you well, and you can do everything to win, but sometimes it doesn't work out. Bob Hagley would, that didn't happen very often if it did at all. You know, I think I was 50 and telling this the other day, I was 50-6 in my 2 years in varsity baseball.
Oh,
won 50 games and lost 6. And like I said, one of them was an extra inning state championship game. One of them was my senior year was a regional championship game. Well, to the eventual team that ended up winning, I think Burlington won the state that year.
Well, I also reached out to a former player, Connor Crotty, and he talked about the impact that you made on him. And he writes, I want to sound like Casey Kasem here. he talked about ask Coach Powell about any moments that stand out that at Otterbein that you'll always remember. Is there anything that, you know, you look back on your career and you go, wow?
I mean, there's some great days, for sure. Like, you know, I think about this. I keep saying the win against Cincinnati and the 300, just how that came about. We're supposed to play Mount St. Joe's, and Chuck Murray's a good guy that was coaching down there at the time and said, hey, we're supposed to play them. And he calls me the day before and he goes, don't cancel your bus, but we can't play tomorrow. I got a game for you. You're going to play Cincinnati. I said, thanks, Chuck. You know, that's good. But I think that stood out because that was a unique thing, situation for me. Obviously the championship games, all of them, you know, I can go, you know, we've finished the last one we won up at Baldwin Wallace. We were, you know, we had to sweep Marietta, to get in the tournament. And then we went on and won like 9 in a row. And we did that and we're fourth in the conference to get into the final 4 teams. And we go on and just run through the tournament, win 3 games and then go on to a regional. That stood out. Going up to Mount Union a few years ago, doing the same kind of thing stood out. Beat Marietta, you know, in 2006 here, in the regular season, and then sweeping them here in the regular season, then winning, hosting the OAC tournament out here and beating them there in 2006. Those are kind of things that stood out. I think where it all got started was against Don Shally. You know, we beat him in 2003 in the OAC tournament. We had a kid named Adam Brandt, who left-handed kid that pitched a little bit in pro ball, played for the, and actually pitched, made it to AAA. It's a firefighter now locally. Threw a one-hitter against Marietta. It was a bunt hit, and we won 1-0. And that game stood out because that we won, and that was up at Heidelberg with Matt Palm and some of the really good teams he had. And we went on to win. That was the first one-on-one. And I would say that one started it, but there's a lot of little ones in there that, you know, I feel fortunate. We had a big, like, you know, I enjoyed last year. North Central out of Chicago is a really good Division III team. Beating them last year was good just because they have a legendary coach and those type of things. So those are good program wins. So, but for me, it's always about the experience of the players. And I tell them that all the time. The biggest thing, you know, I don't know, going back to Connor, Connor's one of those guys that had a lot of talent, and I'm kind of jumping around, but had a lot of talent, and he got, you know, it's for me, the thing I the things that you preach as a coach, and when you get a guy that gets it, those make my days, you know. Connor was a guy that always had the talent, and then when he just met his ability to go play and do the things that was capable, was fun. But unfortunately, COVID hit, you know, that year. I think we beat Dennis in that last game he threw before everything got shut down. But for me, those are the moments now that I really enjoy, is when guys get it, like get the messages and grow and, you know, handle the adversity the right way, or whatever they need to work on to get better at within themselves to figure that stuff out is good. I had a player named Nick Pitzer, who I love dearly. He's in the FBI down in Huntington, West Virginia right now, and texts me all the time about the team, cares a lot about the team. But his earlier years, he was, you know, single kid and from a military family and great parents, but he always, you know, I was always fighting him on, you know, not throwing his bat or glove, saying and I'd take him out of games and all that. And then it all came full circle. I think his senior year, he became one of the best leaders we had. And I remember we were down, we lost a doubleheader over at La Roche, and it didn't look like we were going to make the NCAA tournament, which we didn't, because we needed to at least split, and we didn't do that. And I was really down, and he's the one that was picking me up and saying, hey, man, this is part of the game. This is part of what you signed up for. And those are the things that I would teach him. So he kind of taught me my lesson that I was trying to teach him at the end. So those are the moments, honestly, Ken, that, you know, do it for me now. So the wins, I can name a few things that were, you know, I remember distinctly. There's a lot of things that people say happened that I did or whatever I don't remember that they remember. So that happens in 25 years too. But no, I think the for me now is when kids get it. Now, it makes me emotional sometimes when you get a guy that really understands now what it is. We have a player right now, Braden Quenzel, Quenzel has a lot of talent, and he's leading everything and hitting and everything right now, having a great year. And it's just not letting the game overwhelm him to where it affects his attitude, that affects his approach to how he plays the game. And I think that's starting to happen now for him. So he's starting to see a little bit more consistency on what he can do. And he's got a lot of talent. So if he allows that stuff to happen, really good things are going to happen consistently. The things that he wants to happen, and, you know, kind of getting them to understand, to get out of their way. To me, that's what it's all about. That's what makes me emotional when guys get it, as I would say. You know, they understand what you're trying to get them to do, and they say, oh. And that's kind of what I do now is try to point guys and push them in the direction that they don't understand or they're not sure that's what they want. But I know, being around this game, that's what they want. And when they finally go, oh, okay, now I get it, that's to me when it makes all this worth it.
Well, I do like a little rapid fire here toward the end, and I wanted to shoot a couple quick questions at you to finish up and tell me what you think here. Hate losing or love winning?
Man, that's a good one. I don't know if it's rapid. I think when you're coaching, the biggest thing I had to deal with as a young coach is that how we won. So, you know, the longer I've coached, winning the game 7-3, ugly is acceptable. But I think you can learn. I used to always say I'd rather learn by winning than losing. But I think, you know, that's how you learn too. I think wins used to be a relief, and it would be a relief, and I never enjoyed them. And I think that was one of the things in the last 8 to 10 years that I just said, I'm not going to bang on these guys because we, you know, we're winning like we did the first game against Misericordia World Series. We're up 15-4 in the sixth inning, and we win the game 15-14 on a diving catch. So we kind of almost let a game get away, and that's what baseball can do to you. But instead of sitting, that's probably the one thing I'd say. I'd probably say, obviously, you enjoy winning, but enjoying the wins now, and letting the losses help you grow would be the way I'd handle it then. But as a player, I hated losing. Winning was – I hated losing more than I liked winning, you know. But I think now I'm better at it, and I think you have to be as a coach, or you're – it's just not sustainable to be up and down emotionally. And it's the same thing. I mean, we coaches blame the same game. We go off and go off on a kid or go off on a team. We're trying to say it's not, I've told you what to do. It's your fault. It's your fault. And when you get away from that, and because that's what you don't want the kids to do, but sometimes it's tough, you know, because we wear the wins and losses, you know, more so than the parents would ever think or know. And we're trying to do right by them all the time. But, I would probably say that. I'm sorry for the long-winded answer.
Right. When recruiting, would you rather see a player in person during a game or a showcase?
During a game, 1,000. I shouldn't say 1,000% because that's really not a thing. 100%. Yeah, I just think you can go to showcases, and you got showcase kits now that can run, throw, hit, and all the measurables and the BP and stuff. And, you know, like I always tell our guys, we didn't hit, our assistant coaches will say throughout the year, we didn't hit very good in BP. I always say that's good because we can't win the game in BP. So, you know, or the infield stunk. And I'm like, well, good. We're not going to win or lose because of it. But to see a kid 100% live. How they play, how their attitudes are, how they handle adversity. Probably the most important thing I like seeing.
Best advice for a high school player who wants to play college baseball?
Just like I said earlier, I think have a true passion. Like it's got to be something that whatever you're doing, the next thing's baseball or whatever it might be, lifting or preparing a meal for, you know, to help you get whatever, to help your, you know, if you're trying to gain weight or whatever it might be, whatever you're trying to do to benefit you, I think that's it. And I think have the idea of that you're going and playing with guys that have been in the weight room 4 more years than you, 3 more, 2 year or 1 year, it doesn't matter, that are more physically developed just because of their age. But I think the weight room is important to guys now more so. And I think just having that true passion, not the thing when feels good and things are going good, then that's when I really like baseball. But when it's going really bad, how are you how you're going to work at the game when things aren't going your way? How hard are you going to work to get out of it? And that's, you got to have that continue. I'm going to overcome whatever comes my way, because baseball is going to give you the adversity for sure.
Yeah. If you had one game to win and all of your honor buying teams, who would you give the ball to?
Oh, I mean, one game.
Yeah.
It'd be Dan Romanowski for me. There's some good ones, but I'd say for me, I always used to kid when, you know, my earlier days when I had Dan and Doug Stevens, we'd have the pretty good 1-2. And that was back in the day where they printed paper, and I'd get on the bus, sit in my seat and open the newspaper and put my feet up on the thing on the bus where the tray is and say look to my left and who do we got today? Because I really wouldn't care, because I knew who we had. So, and that'd be that. I'd probably say Dan Romanowski, just because he was just a dominant force. And he pitched 8 years. And, you know, I think if he doesn't tear his meniscus or something covering first base when he was in AAA with Charlotte, he probably makes it to the big leagues.
And finally, why should a kid come and play at Auburn University?
I think for the experience. Both the balance of the education and the competitiveness of the program and playing in the best conference in the country. And we're trying to go, I thought you're going with who you're going to, what game do you want to win? And that'd be a national championship. This team, Coach Fishbowl had them in a national championship game. You know, a couple of years ago, we finished second, a game behind Marietta and a game ahead of Baldwin Wallace, but we got beat in a tournament by Baldwin Wallace, and they got the at-large bid. And those two teams went on to the NCAA tournament. Both of those two teams went to the World Series, and that's, you know, that's our goal. There's nobody that has a higher expectations on the field than us. That's still the thing that I'm chasing, you know, of 25 years here is that realization that, you know, in baseball, if things come together and you have a special group and how you play the game, you can overcome talent and, somebody throwing 95 and you got a guy throwing 85, you can overcome that. I've seen that many times and win those games. So, for me, that's what I would tell a young man. But, you know, I think the fit's got to happen. And we got a lot of degrees and stuff. So I think that part of it is, you know, and I use this thing Coach Fishbowl would always say, you know, could you see yourself here if you didn't play baseball? That's hard for kids that really want to play, though. So, but I think we have a lot here with our location and stuff. And especially now, you know, higher education and the directions it's going and stuff. I think, you know, for us, I think we're in a pretty stable place right now with, I think, the university's leadership.
Well, Chris Huseman just jumped into my head as you were talking, and he was an honor bind player and the first guest I ever had on the podcast. And he could always do a great Dick Fishbowl impersonation. Is there a funny or great story that you could finish up with?
We did our first pitch dinner, and there's so many Fish stories, and the one, and we all imitate him because, you know, imitation's the best way for flattery, and we all did it. But when I was a GA, the funniest story was he had a outside line that was his, and he had a university line, so he had two phones. In his office, and him and God rest her soul, Miss Fish, Donna, were having an argument. I was sitting across from him in the desk, and this wasn't baseball related, but he was in an argument, and he was on the outside line because it was his grand slam phone where he worked. But something happened where she hang up. He they were going back and forth, and he was going, "That's just trite, Donna. That's just trite." And I never knew what trite meant, and I had to look it up. But so he taught me that because Miss Fish was a school teacher and was grammatically always correct, and she was, and so I'm sure he learned that from her. And she hung up on him, and he hangs up the outside line, but he starts dialing on the Otterbein line, and he's getting it, and he's trying to get it, and he's slamming it down, and he's dialing again. And he does it like three times, and he looks at me, and he goes, "You saw me do that the whole damn time." You know, and it was just an awkward thing where I was like, I just walked into a kind of a fight. But there's so many great Fish stories. Going back on the 600th thing, the thing that I remember at his and the consistency on who he was. And I think we can cuss on this, but not like it's not bad cuss. But I remember Tim Kranak, who's a long time, you know, Worthington Christian coach. He was a player, a really good player. And threw him a ball and said, "Congratulations, Fish, your 600th win." And I remember Fish, like, that was the last thing on his mind. He was happy we won the game. And he was just going, "Oh, shit. Like, this doesn't mean anything." But he was such an unassuming guy, and that's what made him great. Just a salt of the earth guy. I think about him. It's hard to believe he's been gone as long as he's been, and just a huge influence, but just a great guy. And we had, a lot of great memories, and he has a lot to do with any and all the success that I have. He's had certainly a big piece of it, for sure.
Well, George Powell, head baseball coach at Audubon University, and once again, Coach, congratulations on win number 600, and thanks again for taking the time out of your day to be on the Athlete One podcast.
I appreciate it, Kim. Thanks for having me. It's great catching up with you, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Don't forget to follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Athlete One Podcast. Here at Athlete One, we're proudly sponsored by the Netting Professionals, improving programs one facility at a time. Coaches, If you're looking to upgrade your facility, there's only one call you need to make, and that's to the Netting Pros. You can contact them today at 844-620-2707, 844-620-2707, or you can visit them online at www.nettingpros.com for all their latest products and projects. As always, I'm your host, Ken Carpenter, and thanks for joining the Athlete One podcast.